Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Wrestling Night in America. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks here with you for this Sunday, September 9th, 2018. And we are going to talk a lot about Hell in a Cell coming up next weekend, next Sunday night to be precise, on the WWE Network. And, of course, we here at Wrestling Night in America will go on the air right after Hell in a Cell closes up shop on the network. And here with me to talk about Hell in a Cell, as well as other things WWE and Mae Young Classic related, is longtime PWTorch.com contributor and hits and misses author John Mazzara. John, good to have you along on the show with me today.
Yeah, thanks, Greg, for having me again.
And I think it's been March, John, since we last had you on the show here. So for those listening who may not be frequent users of PWTorch.com, let the fans know a little bit about what you do for PWTorch.com and what your hits and misses column is all about.
Yeah, I do the hits and misses for Monday Night Raw every week. I used to do a lot more, but then I stopped watching a lot of what I used to cover. So I'm just doing Raw right now. Basically, it's a simple little article each week. It's hits, what do I like about the show, the good matches, the good promos, the good storyline developments, etc., and the misses, the bad, the duds. Last week was a lot more misses than hits, if I remember correctly, because it wasn't a particularly good show from my vantage point. But anyways, that's what I do. I've been doing hits and misses for at least Raw for nearly 12 years now, which is mind-boggling. And
that's a long time in the life of a website wrestling writer.
I know, and like, yeah, it is. Well, and I had, I realized early this year, I really started watching WWF in February 1988. And so I was like, oh my God, I've been watching this for 30 years, you know, this past February. And so it was kind of like a midlife crisis, like, oh my God, I can't believe it's been 30 years that
and
I've
just
been
think
watching
of,
this.
Just and think of how like, many,
and it's been
just think of how many hours that covers.
Oh, good Lord. I know, I've missed, I think, only one Monday Night Raw.
Oh my God.
In its, however, 25-plus year history, because I was flying home from vacation, and there was a bunch of stuff on the DVR, and I had to not watch one thing. Like, I had to, when I left for the trip, I was like, oh, I can't, there was one show I couldn't record on the DVR, and I was just like, oh, I'll just skip Raw this week. And that's like the only one, I think, I'm pretty sure it's the only one I've missed in all these years. And so 2-3 hours a week for 52 weeks a year, because, you know, they don't take a week off.
Yeah. So you are an authority on Monday Night Raw, then. That's worth going out of your way to check out John's hits and misses. He comes at it from that perspective of someone who's seen every episode of Monday Night Raw but one. And, of course, you can catch that every week on PWTorch.com. If you want to talk to me and John tonight about Hell in a Cell, about Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, NXT, Mae Young Classic, even some All In, which we'll get to a little later on in the show, 515-605-9345 is the number to call tonight. And I want to lead off by touching on Hell in a Cell, because that's the next big show that's coming up, and we here at Wrestling Night in America are all about the big shows in pro wrestling. John, I just kind of want to get your take on the matches here on the card, so far. We'll start with Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella teaming up to take on The Miz and Maryse in a mixed tag match. This will likely lead into a singles match between Brie Bella and Maryse at the all-women's pay-per-view Evolution in October. A lot of people have been excited, John, about this Bryan versus Miz feud. They had their first singles match. A lot of people were looking forward to that at SummerSlam last month. Is this match an appropriate follow-up, do you think, an appropriate next chapter in what appears to be a lengthy Daniel Bryan versus Miz feud?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I mean, I'm not, like, head over heels in love with it, but it almost feels like it could have been, like, first before the singles match. But I think, like you said, setting up, they're going to have all the women on the pay-per-view, and they're going to do a lot of mixtures, I think, of current and nostalgia, and the Bellas are kind of, you know, bridging the gap between current and nostalgia acts. So it makes a lot of sense. I guess Maryse, in a way, does too, you know, that they would set that match up. And I'm not as down on Brie being part of Bryan's act as I know a lot of people are. Again, I'm not thrilled with it. I'm kind of just okay with it. But I think once you went to the SummerSlam match and they went the route with the brass knuckles that came from Maryse, it was, you know, the fact that she was involved in helping Miz cheat to win, this does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I thought that was another reason that finish was, and I was more positive on some of the DQ finishes at SummerSlam than most, and I think that's one of the reasons why that finish worked, because to get to this story they're telling now at Hell in a Cell, you had to have Maryse involved, and you had to have Brie Bella come, not necessarily defend Daniel Bryan from Maryse, but add her to the mix if Maryse was going to be involved in some way. And, you know, going back to what you said about having this match possibly at the beginning of the feud, I think what this does is, if it is a long-term feud like so many people think, there's a lot to cultivate between Bryan and The Miz. And I don't think it's creatively a good idea to just do bam, 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 singles match, singles match, singles match, one after the other. I think in order to keep it fresh over the long term, you've got to intersperse, you know, a mixed tag match here, or, you know, maybe a tag match here where Bryan gets a partner and Miz gets a partner or something like that, just to keep it feeling fresh, and so you're not feeling like you're repeating yourself. So, you know, we had the first singles match at SummerSlam. We've got this mixed tag match here at Hell in a Cell, just almost to sort of break things up early on in the feud. Then when you go back to the Bryan-Miz singles match down the line, whether it's you know, in Australia or whether it's at Survivor Series or whatever, and Survivor Series could be another place where you do, you know, you have them on opposite sides of a Survivor Series team at the Royal Rumble. 2 months later, you have them in the Rumble match, getting involved, obviously. So on the road to WrestleMania, there's a lot of ways to kind of break up the monotony of singles match after singles match. So, you know, that's the first reason.
Yeah, that's a really good point, yeah.
Yeah, that's the first reason that jumped out to me, is why you do the mixed tag match second instead of first.
Sure. Yeah.
Another match from the SmackDown side, AJ Styles defending his WWE Championship against Samoa Joe. You know, people were disappointed. They had high hopes for AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura feud. People left a bad taste in people's mouths, I think, by the end of it. And then you come into Styles and Samoa Joe, and it was almost like people had forgotten about that bad taste, and people had high hopes for Joe versus Styles. This one, though, I think has so far lived up to people's expectations and lived up to the hype. You may not have people like Joe getting AJ Styles' family involved. I personally don't have a problem with it. I think that's a good tact for Joe to take. He's trying to get into AJ Styles' head, trying to get that WWE title off of Styles by any means necessary. And we saw AJ Styles finally snap a little bit on SmackDown this past week and assault Samoa Joe with a chair. So, you know, what's your take on where this feud has gone so far? And do you think Samoa Joe wins the title on Sunday?
Indeed. I've really liked what Joe's done. And, you know, you mentioned the DQ and how you were fine with the Miz Bryan one. I mean, the DQ and the Styles and Joe title match at SummerSlam, I thought was great.
Yeah, me too.
When Styles snapped, and it's, like you said, getting in the head, and he has a game plan, and it's a sadistic game plan, and it's not like Randy Orton sadistic, I'm going to rip your ear off. It's, you know, I'm going to get in your head, I'm going to bring your family into this, I'm going to threaten to show up at their barbecue. What was that?
It's the mind games.
Yes, exactly. And, of course, when they actually get to the match, you have a pretty good confidence that the match itself is going to live up to it because of how good these two guys are and how much experience they have, you know, wrestling each other over the years. So I'm definitely looking forward to that match, very high on the card. And as far as the winner goes, God, it's so hard to predict sometimes. But, yeah, I mean, I could definitely see them putting the title on Joe, unless they want AJ Styles to beat Brock Lesnar's record for most days that broke CM Punk's record.
Yeah.
Other than that, I could definitely see them giving Joe a nice heel run as the champion.
I don't think it's necessary to get the title off Styles anytime soon. I think he's done a great job as champion, and I like the length of his reign.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like the work Joe's done, and I think having Joe on top of SmackDown with the title would give it a little bit different perspective. And I'd like to see Joe versus Styles. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see it a long-lasting feud. I'd like to see it have legs. And I think in order to do that, you've got to have Joe win the title somewhere along the way. So if it's Sunday, I'm okay with that.
And it may not lead to a long run by Joe because, you know, Styles may get it back. I'm also thinking the depth of babyfaces on SmackDown is incredibly shallow. I mean, Nakamura's not been on because he has nobody to face for the U.S. title.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go with Joe as the champion, once you get past Styles and if you go to Bryan, Hardy, and then who?
Right.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, notsam.com, wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week with the state of wrestling. Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
Yeah, it's a short list.
That's a real issue for a number of reasons.
Short list, unfortunately. And that's something you'd like to see SmackDown develop here this fall is a little longer list of legitimate baby faces that could, you know, even get in the U.S. title picture. Sticking with the SmackDown motif, the New Day will have a challenger. We just don't know who it is yet. They are the new champions, having defeated the Bludgeon Brothers 2 days after SummerSlam on SmackDown. They will face either The Bar or Rusev Day. Bar and Rusev Day will battle on SmackDown this coming week for the right to face New Day for those SmackDown tag team titles. Who would you like to see in that role, The Bar or Rusev and Aiden English?
Well, I'm hoping for a Rusev Day split up, so I'm thinking that the best way to get to that is have them win to get into the title match and then split up after the title match or because of the title match. So from that point of view, I would say that. But I'm a big fan of The Bar and what they've done So I think, you know, getting another Bar New Day feud, or at least a couple matches, I certainly wouldn't, you know, complain.
And the Bar feels fresh. They've been off TV for quite a while. So it feels like a fresh addition to SmackDown. They've had matches with New Day before, but it's been so long that I think it would feel unique at this point. Now, you mentioned wanting Rusev Day to break up. What would be your scenario here? Would Rusev be the babyface, or would he be the heel?
Well, hopefully he'd be the babyface, because that would give him another babyface singles guy that we just talked about them needing. Yep. And I had said, you know, months and months ago, it seems like, it probably was, like, you've got a pretty easy way to have, you know, Aiden English get jealous of the Rusev Day chance or whatever and turn on him. And you do a short program with the two of them, have Rusev kind of dispatch him, and then move on to other things. And maybe Aiden's been doing better, right? He's been actually successful in his attempts lately to help Rusev and Lana, as opposed to before when he kept accidentally costing them when he was trying to help. Yeah. I wonder if, you know, he's maybe got some sinister plot to get them into the title match and then turn on Rusev when it would really, you know, cost him. But who knows?
Yeah, I'm never going to complain about adding depth to the SmackDown division or the tag team division on either brand, because I think that is so shallow and it's something that's overlooked by WWE for the most part. But I think you're right. Rusev is needed more at this point in the singles division, where he can be a top babyface, because I think he has a pretty good ceiling for that, rather than being sort of stuck in the tag team division as he is now. But we will see on Tuesday night who comes out on top in that tag team battle. To close out the SmackDown side of Hell in a Cell, we have Charlotte versus Becky Lynch. Actually, there is one more match, but Charlotte versus Becky Lynch, SmackDown women's title match. In watching SmackDown and seeing how things have played out, is WWE hedging their bets a little bit here with Becky Lynch? Are they not going as hard with her as a heel as they did at SummerSlam and the first SmackDown after? Have they kind of veered a little bit to make the cheers for her make more sense in the story? Or do you think WWE is bound and determined to keep Charlotte the babyface here and get her over as the big star?
Yeah, I wasn't sure what to make of that, to be honest with you. This week, they're kind of face-to-face on the big screen. It was kind of odd, because neither came off super well in terms of, like, looking like a great babyface, but neither of them came off super strong looking like a heel either. And I wondered if, obviously, like you said, that first night, she came out there with the impossible task of making that Brooklyn crowd boo her. And she was like, I don't like you fans, you know, and it's
that was,
you know,
terrible.
Trying really, really hard. And yeah, and I wonder if they did say, okay, we need to go a different route, and almost to the point of, because it's not like Charlotte doesn't have her fans. It's more like those fans just wanted Becky more than they wanted Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And so I think maybe they just want to have them face, and if you want to cheer Becky, you cheer Becky. If you want to cheer Charlotte, you cheer Charlotte, and they'll see kind of what happens. You know, they'll let the audience reaction from week to week dictate it. But that's, you know, I could be 100% wrong. I'm just not, you know, totally sure what the point was.
Yeah, I think you're in the same boat as a lot of viewers, not sure what direction they're headed there. To close the book now for real on the SmackDown side of the Hell in a Cell card, of which SmackDown has just dominated the numbers, Jeff Hardy versus Randy Orton. This is actually a Hell in a Cell match. Are you surprised that they are using a Hell in a Cell match on Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton and not one of the other major matches on the card?
I was at first, because after the Joe Styles SummerSlam match, I thought, well, they're heating this up to the point where it would make sense to be in a cell. You know, sometimes they have them and you're just like, no, don't go to the cell. It's like the first match. But that would have made some sense. But I think they've sold me on it. Let's put it that way. They've sold me on it because, you know, the Raw title match, which we'll get to, is in Hell in a Cell. So you don't need to have both of them in there. And to have this one just be more of a grudge match, and the brutality that Orton has shown, and even Hardy a couple weeks ago when he fought back and didn't he do a swanton through a table out by the production area or something? You know, there's been plenty of brutality in that feud to warrant a bigger match like a Hell in a Cell. So, yeah, I was certainly surprised at first, but now I'm on board.
It just worries me the condition that it's being reported that Jeff Hardy is in, and putting him inside a Hell in a Cell, and what is he going to do? You know, that's my concern more than anything else. Is hopefully someone is there to look out for the best interests and the long-term interests of Jeff Hardy, because he's shown in the past that he's not necessarily the one to do that for himself. You know, especially seeing his brother Matt and the time off that Matt is now taking and learning the producing role behind the scenes and sort of edging toward that retirement window is Matt Hardy. And I just hope that Jeff doesn't do anything too crazy in this match.
Well, and didn't it seem like Jeff was going to be taking time off when he lost the title to Nakamura in such a short match? And then all of a sudden it was like, no, they had a longer match on SmackDown 2 days later, and then they had a rematch at the pit, you know, and all this stuff. And I'm just like, oh, wait. What happened to his time
I think this is the third pay-per-view in a row I'll be coming out of it saying, okay, now I think Jeff Hardy's going to take some time off, because I think it was like, you know, it was the July pay-per-view that we thought that was going to happen, and it didn't. And then, you know, August came around and we thought it was going to happen after that one, and then it didn't. And, you know, maybe now he'll take some much deserved and, by the sounds of it, much needed time off to rest and relax.
I'm thinking back to the Mick Foley Triple H Cactus Jack Triple H retirement quote unquote match from all those years ago, where Foley had promised the fans he was going to jump off the cage and he never actually did. And I think like they could go that route with Hardy talking about he's going to get up on the cage and he's going to jump off and put Orton through. You build anticipation for it. You can still deliver a really good match without delivering that spot in a way that I think puts heat on Orton, because Orton, you know, stops him from doing it. Orton keeps him from fulfilling that promise in a way that, quote unquote, injures Jeff Hardy. That way Hardy can go off and get some time off without literally jumping off the top of the cage.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, because that would be totally befitting of Orton's character now, this heel character where, you know, he's not even finishing when he says RKO because the fans finish it and he doesn't want them to derive any pleasure from anything he does. Insert your own joke there, I guess,
right.
if you've been bored of Orton matches for 10 years like some people have. But that would be totally up his alley to take Jeff Hardy and say, you know, you fans get pleasure from Jeff Hardy jumping off of things and risking his body. Well, I'm going to prevent him from doing that in this match and totally take the Cell out of the equation. I guess some would see that as a wasted Hell in a Cell match, but I think that would be right up the alley for Orton's character. And I like the sound of that.
Sure.
Moving to the Raw side, so far only two matches from the Raw brand have been announced for Hell in a Cell. One of them is the Raw Women's title, where Ronda Rousey will defend against Alexa Bliss, who gets her rematch for the Raw Women's title after Rousey defeated her for that belt at SummerSlam. We had Rousey win pretty decisively over Bliss at SummerSlam, and in pretty short order. What do they do for an encore here? I mean, WWE is a big fan of Alexa Bliss. I don't see them doing things the same way they did at SummerSlam with her in terms of Rousey just dominating her and sending her to the back of the line. So how do you see this match playing out where Bliss walks away with some semblance of credibility? There's been rumors of Nikki Bella taking on Ronda Rousey in October at Evolution. We've seen the Bellas buddy up to Rousey on TV. Is this where that begins? You know, maybe Nikki Bella somehow turns and gets involved, or there's a miscommunication, something happens. How do you see this match playing out?
Well, it's tough to say, and one more thing to keep in mind is they don't want Bliss to look bad going into Trish Stratus match at Evolution. So I think my guess is you're going to get a much more competitive match, a longer match, but Rousey still, you know, wins in the end. But I'm really not sure, and I guess that's a good thing. Yeah. I don't have a strong sense of how they get there, because I don't think it'll be a Bella thing, because they have to team up still at the Australia Super Show, whatever it's called. Right, I think it's the Bellas and Ronda against, is it Alexa, Alicia Fox, and Mickie James? Or is it, no, it's Riot Squad. Yeah, it's Riot Squad, I think. So anyways, so I'm assuming that's going to set up Nikki and Ronda, if that's indeed the route they're going for Evolution. So I don't think the Bellas get involved. But, you know, we know that they've done a lot of the bells and whistles. You've got Alicia Fox. You've got potentially the Riot Squad could get involved. You could end up having a lot of fighting around the ringside area to kind of draw things out.
I think that's the direction they'll go, because, you know, you talked about wanting to keep Alexa Bliss, if not strong, then – you know, legitimate, but I think it's tough to do that against Ronda Rousey. I mean, how do you get the fans to buy Alexa Bliss having any kind of sustained offense against Ronda Rousey, of all people, you know? The size difference for one, the fighting experience difference for one, I think that would be a tough task. So I think that's where, like you said, the bells and whistles come into play.
Yeah.
The final match, one that we would expect to be the main event of Hell in a Cell, is Roman Reigns against Braun Strowman for the Universal title, in which Strowman is cashing in his Money in the Bank contract inside of Hell in a Cell. So as of Sunday night, there are two Hell in a Cell matches at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. Roman Reigns has been full babyface with the Shield the last few weeks. Braun Strowman has gone full heel by aligning himself with Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre. What would you grade the effectiveness of WWE's attempt to get fans to cheer Roman Reigns, attempt number 1,345 to do that, and not only that, but to turn Braun Strowman heel?
I think their overall effectiveness, because it really goes back to the build-up to the Lesnar match and trying to turn that story into the WWE insider versus the guy who doesn't really want to be here. And they did a pretty good job with the Brock Lesnar portion of that equation, because the fans at that point really just wanted to see Lesnar lose.
Yeah.
But of course they really wanted to see Strowman cash in. And so you can't give it too high of a grade, because yes, they didn't want, you know, Lesnar to win, but they didn't want Roman to either. And then they go this route where, you know, you bring back the Shield. That's one more step in the process, right? Everybody loves the Shield, so we'll bring back the Shield, and then we'll have Strowman turn on him, and then he'll turn and he'll join in with these, you know, other heels, Ziggler and McIntyre. So they've had a good playbook. If they had different pieces to play with, does that make sense? It's like the right game plan but the wrong players. And so I guess the effort is a good one, but it seemed like this week's Raw, the crowd just seemed flat to me. Like, they weren't cheering for Roman. They weren't booing Strowman, but they weren't really cheering for Strowman either. So I think it's just kind of a mess.
Yeah, I'll say this. It's gone better than I expected it to go. And I think, which I, you know, maybe low expectations on my part, but yeah, the part of the fan base that isn't just going quiet because they don't want to boo Strowman, but they're also not being given a reason to cheer him. And, you know, the same way with Reigns, they don't want to cheer him, but, you know, they're kind of tired of booing him. He's the Universal Champion. I think if you take that part of the crowd out of it, WWE's booking of it has been pretty successful. They've put these guys in position to succeed, and I think for the most part the crowds have been a little more receptive to those turns than I expected at this point. We've reached the bottom of the hour here on Wrestling Night in America. I am PW Torch columnist Greg Parks, along with PWTorch.com contributor John Mazzara. We are talking the big events in pro wrestling, just having covered the Hell in a Cell card coming up next weekend, next Sunday night to be precise, on the WWE Network. If you'd like to call in and talk to us, it's 515-605-9345.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
And we're now going to go to the phones for our first call of the evening. As usual, it is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland, on with the first call. Ryan, good to talk to you again this week, my friend.
And my first question for you is on Drake Maverick. Hmm. See them possibly doing a heel versus heel match with McIntyre and Ziggler against the Ulcers of Pain, and you see Drake as a step down from Paul Orton?
It's kind of interesting. WWE is at least admitting their fault in not having someone with the Authors of Pain to talk for them. That's something that they've needed since Ellering left. I don't know that Drake Maverick is the right guy. We're 1 week into this experiment. It certainly came out of left field to me, John. First, what's your take on Drake Maverick being associated now with the Authors of Pain? And secondly, to Ryan's question, do you see, now that Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler are the Raw Tag Team Champions, do you see a heel versus heel match against the Authors of Pain in the future?
Well, yeah, the Maverick thing, he's been so good on 205 Live, and I think I'm far from alone in saying, like, it's just weird to see him playing a babyface, basically, authority figure on Tuesday nights, and now seemingly a heel manager on Monday nights. There's just a disconnect there. And I wonder how I'd feel if this was the introduction of Maverick to WWE fans. Obviously, a lot of them would know him from his, you know, his time on Impact. But as opposed to having seen him in this other role for so long, it's hard for me to judge how he could be as the Authors of Pain manager in other circumstances. But for right now, I'm just so jarred with the two different kind of seeming roles for him that it's the first week, at least, was not good for me. Now, maybe they win me over time. As far as a heel versus heel, I think you're going to have to wait a while because they need some major rehabilitation since being called up. They have not been used well on the main roster, and having a mouthpiece hopefully will help. But it's going to be a while because you also have to get through more of the Shield and the Ziggler McIntyre feud. That's going to take some time.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, back to you.
You're going to want to get the revival too.
Yeah. McIntyre and Ziggler took the revival spot in the tag title match this past week, so I'm sure that the revival won't take that laying down. So, Ryan, back to you for follow up or second question.
Yeah, second question is talking about that death match tournament that was intergender match, one of the craziest weapons I saw were fans that were turned on that were used as weapons. What's the craziest weapon you've seen used in a wrestling match?
Oh my gosh. John, do you have anything that jumps to mind for you while I'm thinking?
I'm kind of the same as you. I'm like, okay, go back in time, because nothing's like immediately jumping to mind that hadn't been used multiple times. You know, I mean, there were some crazy things like flaming barbed wire bats.
Well, yeah, and I guess
flaming things like that.
I don't think it precludes it from being the craziest thing I've ever seen if I've seen it more than once. So I would say fire in any form is probably the craziest weapon I've ever seen used. In a match. I mean, it's hard to go any crazier than burning your opponent or using fire to, you know, even if it's just putting them through a table and the fire goes out or whatever it is, you know, it's hard to go a level up from fire if you're talking about a weapon.
Yeah, and I remember, I didn't see it, but I remember, I think it was Mick Foley's first book, him doing a story from his, I'm guessing it was ECW, but it could have been in Japan, where he had a steel chair wrapped with a flaming towel.
Yeah.
And I think he was the recipient of it, that the guy swung the towel, but the towel came off the chair.
That sounds like a Terry
Funk
match.
And flew at him and kind of wrapped it. Yeah, that would make some sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, nothing else really jumps to mind.
Okay. Ryan, back to you.
Okay, my final question for you is on that Scarlett Bordeaux character. Do you see her doing the Canadian Destroyer Impact Wrestling, since she did it a couple weeks ago on an indie show?
I think there's going to be a long progression before we see her in the ring on Impact. They're really just keeping her backstage in vignettes and in interview segments for now. And I think it's working to establish her character. I think it'll still be a while before she gets in the ring. And, you know, they really haven't even teased her being a wrestler on Impact yet. So I think it would be a cool story if, you know, she's all about, you know, her beauty and using that to her advantage, and kind of faking people out because she is smart, even though most people only see only see skin deep with her. And then it would be very interesting if she got in the ring and wrestled and people had such low expectations, and then, you know, she rips off a Canadian Destroyer or something like that. But I don't think that's anytime soon. I think that'll be further down the line. So, Ryan, appreciate the call. Hope you call in again next week after Hell in a Cell, and we'll talk to you next time.
Okay, actually, she already has a match on YouTube with Impact Wrestling, if you follow their YouTube channel.
I don't, but I'm wondering if it really counts in YouTube in Impact canon if it's not on Impact TV. So I'm glad you pointed that out, though. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Okay, thanks for taking the call.
Thank you, Ryan. And as Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland drops off, just a reminder, 515-605-9345 is the number to call to talk to me and John Mazzara here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. John, I want to turn our attention now to the Mae Young Classic, which all matches are in the can, so to speak, but they just started airing on the WWE Network this past Wednesday after NXT. And round one, episode one, began with the introduction of the announcers. Michael Cole, Renee Young, and Beth Phoenix were on commentary. 15-minute time limit for all first-round matches. Match number one was Zatara versus Tegan Knox. Zatara from Chile. The story of this match was... Tegan Knox was slated to be in the Mae Young Classic last year when she had that major knee injury and needed surgery. And the story was of her trying to avoid Zatara's offense on that knee, and the announcers made frequent mention of it, which was prescient because Knox would later get seriously hurt again in the tournament. But in this match, she picks up the victory over Zatara. John, you know, hard luck for Tegan Knox, man, because I was lucky enough to see her first NXT match in Venice, Florida, here on the Florida Loop. And she has that Bayley Dakota Kai likability to her. And I think she could be a real big babyface in NXT, and I think NXT had real big plans for her before this second knee injury that happened during the Mae Young Classic tapings. And you got to wonder now, how is that going to affect how those in NXT see her? We know that being frequently injured has held back wrestlers on the main roster before. You know, do you see some reticence when she comes back in NXT pushing her as a major deal again because of the injuries?
And, you know, I watched it, but I hadn't followed, like, any of the news, so I actually hadn't heard she had re-hurt herself until you just mentioned it.
I should have had a spoiler warning. My apologies.
No, I'm not worried about it. It's fine. I'm just saying it's kind of breaking news for me because I, you know, try to avoid the spoilers. And I didn't really, remember her. I'm trying to remember from last year. I'm sure they probably had her on the Bracketology special, but I'm trying to remember how much they showed of her when she, because she got hurt before it started, right, last year?
Yeah, I don't know.
She didn't actually,
I don't know if she was officially bracketed or if I think it was like 2 weeks before it was announced. They had a video package before her match here, and they mentioned it there. They showed her on crutches at the Performance Center talking to Triple H. So I don't know that she ever made it to the bracket. I think maybe she was offered the spot and then got hurt or something of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, it is unfortunate either way. Like you said, we've seen this. You know, the Revival had this when they first got called up. I don't remember which one got hurt, and then they came back, and then was it the other one who got hurt?
Yeah.
And now they're just kind of, they're still on, but they're not being used. But, of course, Vince McMahon doesn't really necessarily use tag teams well, so I'm like, I don't know if it's because of the injuries or not. So it's, you know, it's hard to tell. You certainly hope when she comes back healthy down the line, I'm hopeful that the fact that she's in developmental and not as strong on Vince McMahon's radar probably yet, that it won't count, you know, against her.
Yeah, that's the hope. Second match at the Mae Young Classic that aired on Wednesday was Rhea Ripley defeating MJ Jenkins. Jenkins has appeared on Impact Wrestling in the past. Ripley was in the Mae Young Classic last year as a smiling babyface. And here she was as a frowning heel. She ended up getting the victory over Jenkins. And I think that's an interesting story to tell, John, is you have several wrestlers who were in the tournament last year coming back this year, and you don't want the same old story of, you know, I couldn't get it done last year, but I've gotten better, and I'm back for a second crack at it. So instead you have Rhea Ripley, who, you know, she couldn't get it done last year, so she changed her outlook and you know, became a heel and that sort of thing. So I think that's an interesting story to tell.
Yeah, I like that. That was one of the better, I think, video packages this week, was her story. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good because, you know, sometimes there's like a heel turn and you're just kind of like, okay, but why or whatever, or it feels forced.
Yeah.
This, like, just seemed logical. Like, it wasn't a heel turn because it was a year ago. You know what I mean? But it was like telling the story of, since I took that loss, I realized I had to change, and she took this, you know, because you could make, you could do it the opposite way, right? You could change your outlook and I worked harder or those kind of things. But this was really like kind of logical in her mind, which is always good for a heel, right? Heels don't think they're heels. So it's like, you know, I had to change my outlook. I had to get more aggressive. I had to stop, you know, caring so much about what the fans said and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so, yeah, I really thought it was effective. And I don't remember her at all from last year. And I saw every episode, so I'm sure I saw her match.
Yeah.
I don't remember her at all, and I mean, I have a feeling I'll remember her this time.
Sure. Yeah. She's got the size that stands out, you know, and that's what that's what strikes me about her. And she's got a good look to her. Vanessa Craven versus Lacey Lane was match number three. This was the big versus little match of the show. Lacey Lane getting the upset victory over the larger Vanessa Craven. During Lacey Lane's video package, they showed a video from Alex Porteau's Wrestling 2.0. So legendary jobber to the stars in 1996, Alex the Pug Porteau, gets his name on NXT television in 2018. What a world. But, you know, this match, I mean, did it tell the story effectively for the underdog Lacey Lane getting the upset victory over Vanessa Craven?
Yeah, it was probably the weakest of the matches on this week's show, I think. Neither of them, to me, stood out that well, other than the size, because she has this, what's her name? The Mountain, Craven. She, you know, has this, you know, big size advantage that stands out, but nothing else about her really stood out to me. And so it was fine, but it wasn't, you know, anything special.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
And the main event of episode one was the perhaps the most anticipated wrestler for a lot of people, Meiko Satomura, taking on Killer Kelly from Portugal. And Satomura, I didn't know. I knew she wrestled on Nitro back in the day, but I didn't know she was only 16 when she wrestled on Monday Nitro.
Yeah.
Something that certainly would not happen today. That just boggles my mind that actually happened. This was the main event. Good match.
I wonder if they knew.
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. With how
I mean, it was WCW.
Well, that's what I'm saying. With his,
they didn't know what was going on half the time.
The right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing most of the time in WCW, at least during that time period.
Yeah.
So that could have very well fallen between the cracks. Satomura gets the victory here over Killer Kelly. Good match. Crowd was behind Satomura. They acknowledged her as a Japanese wrestling legend. I guess the disappointment for me here is I wish that Satomura was matched up against someone other than Killer Kelly, because I hate to be a one and done for Kelly, because she's wrestled, I believe, on the WWE UK shows, and she showed really well there. And I was looking forward to seeing more of her on the Mae Young Classic, and we'll just have to settle for this one match.
Yeah, of the three losers, or excuse me, the four losers, she was, to me, by far the best. And I was even sitting there thinking, like, okay, obviously, you know, they have set this up so much that Satomura is going to win. And all of a sudden, I'm like, would they do something crazy and have her get upset? Because I was that impressed with Kelly during the match. And seemed like she certainly deserved to be, you know, featured at some point in the second round.
Yeah. That is it for the Mae Young Classic talk here. We anticipate, as the rounds continue, talking about it here on Wrestling Night in America. We're going to go back to the phones, though, and we have an anonymous caller with no area code. It literally says anonymous on my switchboard. So, anonymous, please state your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Craig from Toledo.
Ah, Craig from Toledo. I had a feeling it might be Craig from Toledo. So, Craig, good to talk to you again here on Wrestling Night in America. What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, first of all, congratulations to your Jags.
Thank you. It was not pretty, but it's 1-0, so I'll take it.
And, John, I don't know your football team. So.
Well, it used to be the 49ers, but I actually just kind of stopped
Oh.
What was that?
Did we lose John? John, are you there? Did we lose John?
Can you hear me?
Okay, I got you back now.
He just cut out for a second.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me okay now?
Yep, got you good. So, yep. Yeah, you left us hanging.
Okay.
The 49ers are no longer your team.
I said, I stopped watching NFL a couple years ago. But years I was a diehard 49ers fan. But I kind of stopped losing interest with the some of the concussions and the Ray Rice stuff. Let's give the guy one game for punching his girlfriend in the face kind of things. Just kind of made me feel bad watching, and then the 49ers, who had been so good for that short run, suddenly were bad, and then they fired Harbaugh, and there was a lot of that stuff from a personal team level standpoint, and then the rest of it with the just kind of NFL in general. And yeah, I really haven't watched much the last two seasons.
Okay. Craig, I hope your team isn't the Browns.
Dude. Now my team's the Lions. I got to wait another day for my team to.
Oh, okay. So prime time. The nice thing about that though is you can enjoy the first Sunday of football without being stressed about your team playing.
Yeah, we're still. I can't say 500. We're still.
You haven't lost
zero.
Yet. Yeah.
You're undefeated.
Yeah.
Undefeated.
Yeah. Undefeated, never lost. Okay, but football season gets me to go around to think about Royal Rumble because it's only 4 months away because football season's so short. And it's fun to predict and hypothesize about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about what's going to happen at going into Mania, trying to kind of predict and hypothesize about what's going to happen in the next few months. And I assume that the men's championships on both brands only have like three legit options from here through Mania. And I got Roman Strowman and a wild card on the Raw side, AJ Joe and a wild card on the SmackDown side. The wild cards being like Drew and Seth, Miz, Brian Orton, Cena kind of guys.
Mm-hmm.
But they're low percentage. It's probably going to be who it is right now. Or coming out of Hell in a Cell. But if you were to set odds based on those champions or probable champions, who are your top three picks to win the Rumble?
Okay. I think Braun Strowman is up there. Because I think Roman Reigns is going to be a long-term champion. I don't think you spend 3 or 4 years trying to get him over to the degree that WWE has tried to and make it a short reign. So I could see him holding the title at least at Royal Rumble even through to WrestleMania next year. I could conceivably see the Braun Strowman-Reigns feud ending at Hell in a Cell for the time being and then picking back up at WrestleMania at Royal Rumble season and having Strowman win and maybe do something with Reigns at WrestleMania for the title. So I think Strowman would be a contender. I think the same could be said for Joe and AJ Styles. Like I told John earlier on the show, I think Joe wins the title somewhere here against AJ. But I don't necessarily think it's long reign. I think Styles gets it back, and I think Joe is the kind of guy who can win a Royal Rumble and really use that to propel him into WrestleMania season. It is so tough because the potential Royal Rumble winners, the pool is so shallow. The other thing is, it doesn't have to be, though, because the Royal Rumble winner, because there are two different titles and two different brands that a winner could come from, winning the Royal Rumble doesn't automatically mean you're going to main event WrestleMania anymore. it could mean you're opening the show in a world title match like we saw before with Edge and Alberto Del Rio and guys like that. So that does seem to open it up a little bit. You know, I know I'm picking all heels here, but I could totally see a dark horse like Drew McIntyre. I don't know how long the Drew McIntyre-Dolph Ziggler arrangement is going to last. It doesn't feel to me like it's a long-term thing, and I say that acknowledging they just won the tag team championship on Raw. But of those dark horses, you know, guys like Finn Balor or Baron Corbin, if you even want to throw them into the mix, Drew McIntyre to me has the highest ceiling, and he's the guy that could really be sort of a dark horse Royal Rumble winner that could really work and would really pay off at WrestleMania and beyond. John, do you have a top three while I rambled there for finding my answer?
Well, I mean, you're going to always have holding out hope for Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Because you could see them going Bryan Styles or Bryan Joe, potentially. But what I'm thinking, I'm almost wondering, could you get a Dean Ambrose or a Seth Rollins winning it to face Roman Reigns? Because I'm in agreement with you. I think Reigns will still be the champion defending the title at WrestleMania, which is nice because that means he can't win the Royal Rumble, right? So could we see one of the other two Shield members win it?
That's a story right
and
there.
And you could even, yeah, you could. Is he going to face Reigns? Will he challenge the SmackDown champion to kind of spread the Shield dominance over both brands? You know, and then if he does challenge Reigns, whichever ones it is, you've got the third member kind of caught in the middle. And I could see them doing it with either of them. I mean, Rollins makes a little more sense just because he's a little, you kind of think of him more as a WrestleMania main eventer than Ambrose, but I could see that being a really interesting storyline, number of possibilities, really.
And the other thing is, you know, sort of the same dilemma I had picking Drew McIntyre is that you don't know how long this incarnation of the Shield is going to last and who's going to turn on who. You know, we already had Seth Rollins turn. The speculation now is that brooding Dean Ambrose is going to be the one to turn, and if that's the case, I think that puts Ambrose slightly ahead of Rollins if you're handicapping which Shield member is most likely to win the Royal Rumble, provided Reigns is still champion, because then you've got the heel Ambrose against the babyface Reigns, and it fits a little better than Reigns versus Rollins as two babyfaces.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Craig, does that all make sense to you?
Yeah.
I kept up with all of it. Yeah, I got it all written down here, and gonna send it off to the bookies.
Okay, good. Anything else from you, Craig, tonight?
I got two other things. My second one is the Rousey and Charlotte. I'm guessing that that's gonna be the main event of WrestleMania, and if that is the main event of WrestleMania, Charlotte can't have the title because they wouldn't do a title for title. I wouldn't think. I would think they would want to have Charlotte win the Royal Rumble to go against Rousey to get her off of SmackDown and on to, you know, to get that match going in a build up to WrestleMania. So Charlotte not having a title means that Becky would be a heel champion and against tons of face contenders going in, you know, throughout the football season.
Yeah, the Charlotte,
like Naomi and Oscar.
Yeah, the Charlotte Rousey match that people are speculating on whether or not it's the main event of WrestleMania is something interesting, because you still got the four horsewomen are – some people are still speculating about that. But with Becky and Charlotte in this intense feud, I don't see how they reform that in time to do anything with Rousey and her colleagues. So I would put more credence in the idea of a Charlotte-Rousey match at WrestleMania. And we could be seeing the start of the rebuild of Charlotte to be in a position come WrestleMania or come Royal Rumble where she is seen as on the same level, only on SmackDown, as Ronda Rousey. in preparation to get her ready for that WrestleMania match. I think you do that match sooner rather than later, John. And by sooner, I mean WrestleMania. I don't mean, you know, a year and a half or 2 years down the line. Do you see WWE taking advantage of that match at WrestleMania, or do you think that WWE puts that off for another time?
I mean, I certainly have kind of been assuming that would happen at WrestleMania. The issue to me now is, like you said, you want Charlotte to be at her strongest. But if it means she's got to lose the title before then to Becky. So how are you going to have Charlotte that strong if she's not the champion? But, I mean, I think they could certainly have her win the Rumble, like Craig said, and people would probably be, at least some people, I think their hope would be, they assume she's going to challenge Becky. Like, okay, but instead she comes out and says, you know what, Becky, I'm just done with you. Like, I know I can beat you. I'm assuming every time she faces Becky, Becky cheats to win. So she kind of is like, you know I can beat you. Everyone here knows I can beat you. But I want a challenge. And for a real challenge, I'm going to challenge, you know, Ronda Rousey. So I think that would be a real easy thing to do.
And I'll just throw this out there, too. If Charlotte, well, the trouble is you do a Women's Royal Rumble, they'll have to face one of the champions. You know, my thinking was have Charlotte as champion. Have Charlotte and Ronda Rousey do a champion versus champion match. Not necessarily the titles are on the line, but if you want both women at their strongest at WrestleMania, then you do a champion versus champion match. And if you want to do it in the main event of WrestleMania, add it as a champion versus champion match. Now, the problem comes in is, you know, what happens to the Women's Royal Rumble winner? You know, what title shot are they
going to get? Well, here's a thought. Yeah, what if, because last year, the first Women's Rumble, Charlotte was the champion, so she wasn't in it. What if this year she's the champion and she says, I don't care. I didn't get to be in the first one. I'm going to be in the second one. And they, I mean, you know, the New Japan champion's in the G1 Climax tournament.
That's
to get a title shot down the line. So it would be unprecedented, and they like to do first ever. Well, I mean, obviously they had champions in those early Royal Rumbles before it, you know, became for the title shot. But you could have Charlotte as the champion win the Royal Rumble. That's another first, and challenge Rousey in a title versus title match, and that would be certainly something different.
Yeah, certainly, Craig. Any of those scenarios appeal to you?
All of them do. I love these, like, you know, thinking about what's going to happen. Because it's just fun to think about what, you know, it's not fantasy booking, because it's not like, I want this to happen, I want this to happen. It's more like kind of what do you think they're going to do kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fantasy booking, fine too, but, you know, this is sort of like, where do you see it going?
Right.
Kind of like, it's like a detective.
That's my final question. Yeah, that's a good comparison. I like that.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
My final question mainly is for John, because of all the Raws and everything he's watched over the eons of decades. All In or G1, Wrestle Kingdom, like a weekend like last weekend, I watched All In, and a lot of people watched All In, and my friends and stuff, and they were like, when they went in to watch Raw and SmackDown, they said, man, it was like work, going to work to watch the show. And I really don't think that way, because I can, you know, I can distract myself with a game or whatever while I'm watching and stuff, but do you ever consider it work coming out of something like that?
Well, I I was doing Raw and SmackDown through about this time last year. And for me, SmackDown was feeling like work. This was during the Jinder Mahal title reign, and I was just frustrated with a lot of the booking on SmackDown, and I was actually enjoying last summer. I thought Raw had a really good run after the Superstar Shakeup. So I got to a point, and I literally emailed Wade Keller and just said, I need a break from doing hits and misses from SmackDown, because it's just starting to feel that way, like you said. So not necessarily coming out of a specific comparison point with a All In or a New Japan show or anything else, but it got to that point where I'm like, am I only watching because Wade wants me to do hits and misses for SmackDown on Friday, you know, or whatever day? So yeah, I have certainly had those feelings in the past, yeah.
And Greg, did you feel burdened at any time, like after any of those events?
Not really. You know, I know what, you know, I'm able to compartmentalize what each show is about and what each show tries to do. I know what I'm getting into with New Japan, and I can't go into watching Monday Night Raw expecting the same thing. I go in knowing what WWE is all about, what they're trying to do, and how that's different from what New Japan or what All In tries to do. So, you know, even though it's all the same genre, everybody has their different spin on it, and, you know, I take that for what it is. But, you know, I was in the same boat as John when I gave up covering SmackDown. You know, I covered SmackDown in real time every Thursday, Friday, then Tuesday night for 10 years, and 10 is a very round number, and I liked it, and I said, you know what, I'm good. You know, I've done 10 years. You don't notice it when you're watching it, but when I was typing it and covering it live every week and writing down what was happening and what was said, I just felt like I was repeating myself every week. And, you know, I didn't like that. But that's what WWE is. You know, WWE, they have their little box that they present professional wrestling.
It's a machine.
Yeah, that's how they present it. And they rarely drift outside that box, especially, you know, most of the time, the 9.5 years I covered SmackDown, it was a taped show. So there was no big surprises that it was the secondary show. Now, with it being live, it's more of the, you know, if Raw is the A show, SmackDown is the A minus show. It's not the B show anymore. So, you know, I just felt like I was in a rut. You know, I my degree's in journalism, so I like to write, and I enjoyed covering SmackDown and being able to write about what was happening, but it just got so repetitive, and I felt like I was creatively stunted in covering the show because I was recapping the same things that were happening every week. It was just different guys in interchangeable parts, but they were all saying the same thing, and every match had the same beat to it, and I got tired of it. I said, I think it would be best for me to just kind of sit back and take it in where I'm in a position where I'm not covering it in real time. So that's why I kind of gave that up. So I don't even remember what your question was now at this point, but I've gone down this rabbit hole. But I guess to get back to your original point, I'm able to separate in each show and understand that they have different demographics that they're targeting. They have different fans that they're targeting with their work, and I'm able to compartmentalize that, I guess.
I think compartmentalize was the key word, and I've been having chats with Darrell about that. Because everybody tries to compare Raw, SmackDown, WWE to NXT or to New Japan, stuff like that. And it's like you got to kind of keep it to what you expect it to be.
Yeah.
It's only going to be – and if you don't do that, you're going to just frustrate yourself to no end.
I agree.
So that's a good – that's a good – cathartic. And thanks for taking my call, guys.
Thank you, Craig. Good to hear from you, and I look forward to hearing from you again soon. So Craig from Toledo joined us here. Always good talking to him. And, John, I do want to talk, as Craig mentioned, All In, and we covered that in depth here last week on Wrestling Night in America. And I know that you told me off air that I don't think you've had a chance to watch All In, but you've stayed up to date with the coverage of it and everything like that. So I'll ask you more of the macro questions and not the micro dealing with All In. But, you know, we're now a little more than a week removed from All In. And what's your take on what is this going to mean for independent wrestling? You know, was this really a game changer, and are other people going to throw their hat into the proverbial ring and try this, or was this just a one-time thing that worked because it was a confluence of personalities and events, and it was the perfect storm?
Yeah, it's so hard to know, isn't it? Because on the one hand, you have that kind of feeling like, okay, they did this once. Can they do it again? And I think they could do it for a few more big shows in other markets, New York, L.A., you know, some of those kind of places. But is it one of the reasons I didn't go out of my way to watch it was the kind of one-and-done feeling of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there were some storylines and some titles, but, you know, like I had seen a lot of Pentagon Jr. In Lucha Underground. And I really liked what I saw when I had seen him wrestle. And obviously I've seen a lot of Omega in New Japan. So I'm like looking at that and I'm thinking, that's going to be a great match, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what does it really matter? It's not going to lead to anything. And so I think there's going to be something holding back growth if it's just every 6 months or every 4 months, we're going to do a big All In. This is going to be All In New York. This is going to be an All In Minneapolis and All In Dallas and All In Los Angeles. You know, if there's different people on, because at some point somebody's going to sign with WWE and not be available. At some point somebody might have an exclusive contract where they can't, or maybe Okada, you know, can't come from Japan. You know what I mean? It's like, so it's hard to know. And we know from what we've heard, WWE is going to make a big push to get Omega and Rhodes and the Young Bucks. And if that's the case and they were to sign some or all of them, then it's really over there.
Yeah.
And I guess until we see what happens early next year with their contracts, it's hard to say. I think I don't know that somebody else – I mean, God, they were like – the right people at the right time at the right place to do this. And mm-hmm. could somebody else pull it off if they were to sign with WWE? I don't know.
Yeah, and I guess certainly this was a one-off, or at least for now a one-off, but if you were a frequent viewer of Being the Elite, there were a lot of storylines that were paid off here. The things will no doubt continue on future episodes of Being the Elite. But yeah, it's not building to a pay-per-view. It's not building to another TV show next week. So in that regard, it is different. But I'll play devil's advocate a little bit. I think as much as you come down on the side of because it's not building to anything, it's a little limiting. I would say it kind of opens things up in another respect, that you're not beholden to, okay, this show has to lead to something else. We can just do whatever we want on this show because, you know, we can throw Pentagon Jr. in there against Kenny Omega and not have to worry about setting something up for both guys for next week, or, you know, building to a pay-per-view and doing a screwy finish because we can't give away a finish here because they're going to have another match 2 months down the line. So as much as it is limiting from one point of view, I think it is – in another way, it kind of opens up the possibilities of running a more refreshing show from that standpoint.
That's a fair point. Do you know, I haven't really heard, I don't know if they announce this stuff. Obviously, when WWE does like WrestleMania, they'll say like, people from all 50 states and 25 different countries or whatever. Do we have any idea of, was this mostly a Chicago crowd? Was this mostly a travel crowd? Was it 50-50? Yeah. And the reason I'm just curious is, like, if this was mostly a Chicago crowd, then I could see fans in these other markets going, I want them to come here. But if this was mostly a crowd that traveled to Chicago for it, and they've seen it, now they loved it. I mean, I haven't heard any, I don't think I've heard a single negative. I mean, there may be a few things where they said, oh, I didn't like this, or I wish this would have happened. But overall, I mean, everyone seemed to really enjoy it. But would they travel, you know, in 4 months, would they travel to another city again to see it again? And maybe they would, you know?
I think it was a big fly-in crowd, partly because of the StarCast convention that was attached to it.
Right.
I think that got a lot of fans as well. But, you know, it was going to be a fly-in crowd regardless, just because this was the first time ever and people wanted to be a part of history. Now, your point, though, if you're going to do an all-in 2, an all-in 3, an all-in 4, all of a sudden that specialness isn't there for the future, so you may not have people flying in.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, with New Japan doing more shows in the United States going forward, people are going to want to fly into those shows. So then they're going to have to decide, am I going to fly in to see New Japan, or am I going to fly in to see All In, or depending on what time of year, am I going to fly in to see WrestleMania and WrestleMania weekend shows? There is a lot that's going to go into it if they are going to do a second one. And I wrote about some of them in my column in the Torch newsletter, which is out now this past week. I kind of looked it all in from a couple different points of view. And one of the ones I looked at it was, the potential of an all-in two, and how do they make it special, and how do they make it must-see without having the StarCast convention attached to it, without having it be the first time ever, you know, a show drawing 10,000 fans that's non-WWE in America since WCW or whatever it was. Are they still going to get interest in it? And I'm sure there will be interest.
They can't do it WrestleMania.
Yeah, right. So
because they've already got the – the New Japan, right? Isn't it New Japan and ROH
it's
combined show?
The
is that
MSG,
what it is? At
the MSG
Madison
show.
Square Garden?
Is that what you're thinking of?
Yeah.
So you know that would be off the table. And you know, like
right.
I mentioned, it all depends on what Cody, the Bucks, and Omega do contract wise. I get the sense that they're leaning toward not signing with WWE, but it's not done until it's done. You know, the contracts aren't signed until they're signed. So,
right.
You know, we'll have
and
to
And that's kind of my assumption has been also, yeah.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Let's move on and wrap things up here in the last 15 minutes or so, talking about Raw and SmackDown from this past week and looking ahead to this week. Monday Night Raw tomorrow night. As we record this tomorrow night, Ronda Rousey and Natalya slated for tag team action against Alexa Bliss and Alicia Fox. Plus, we have Triple H on the show responding to comments made by The Undertaker last week, who showed up on Raw. And also Mick Foley will be on TV as well. This past week, lots of big stuff that happened, although it was I would say a critically panned episode of Monday Night Raw. The Shield were taken out by a large group of heels to end the show. We had Kevin Owens setting up a feud with Lashley, returning a week after he quit. Shawn Michaels was on the show cutting a promo to promote Taker versus Triple H in Australia. That's when Undertaker came out. We had Dana Brooke apparently being done with Titus Worldwide, as mentioned by Ryan earlier. Drake Maverick is now the mouthpiece of the Authors of Pain, and Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre are the tag team champions. Couple things I want to ask you about here, John, and the first is Shawn Michaels and his promo. Did you get any sense watching that promo? Because I've seen both sides of the aisle giving their thoughts on this. Did you get a sense from that promo that Shawn Michaels is seriously considering getting back in the ring for one more match?
Yeah. I mean, I think my kind of takeaway was he is considering it, has not decided yet, but if he does, you might as well lay the groundwork now. Mm-hmm. Because if they don't, it's not like they went so far as to say, like, well, we're definitely having the match, you know? So I think, depending on what happens between Undertaker and Triple H, you know, there's different ways they could go, but it certainly felt like more a segment hyping Undertaker, Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania than it was Undertaker, Triple H, which it was too. I mean, overall, it was very good, and I think it accomplished, you know, multiple things, but it was more 60-40 the Shawn Michaels potential than the Triple H match that's actually happening.
Kevin Owens and Lashley. Can Kevin Owens as a heel bring something out of a babyface Lashley that we haven't seen on Raw yet? We've kind of seen Lashley the last couple of weeks in his interactions with Jinder Mahal, you know, doing the goofy bit where he's all really excited about, you know, almost inauthentically excited about, you know, doing the stuff with Jinder Mahal. You know, we know Kevin Owens and his personality. Is he going to bring something out of Bobby Lashley that will make people snap their fingers and say, okay, that's the Bobby Lashley that we've got to push?
No. I don't know. I mean, it's like, again, this is one of those cases, right, where they both seem maybe miscast. As a lot of people want to see Lashley go heel, and a lot of people were hoping that the Owens quitting was a step in the direction of him ultimately being a babyface. Now, I will say, I honestly don't remember what it was. It wasn't this week. It was two Raws ago, and it was interaction between Lashley and Corbin. And I can't remember what happened. I just remember him kind of starting to walk out of the room, and then he turned back and had like a one-liner or kind of a put Corbin in his place. I can't remember the specifics, but I just remember that moment thinking, okay, we need to see more of that from Lashley. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could remember the specifics, but in the moment I was like, we need to see more of that from Lashley. And then, as you said, this week he was like hamming it up.
Yeah.
And not that it wasn't, I mean, it could be amusing, but you know, it's the old thing, I know Wade Keller used to talk about, if you could juggle, that doesn't mean you should juggle on wrestling, you know. And maybe if he could be that humorous, or that, even if he was good at playing that role, is that the role you want him to be playing? Look at him, he's a big monster killer.
Yeah.
It didn't really do anything, you know, for me.
I guess it was showing a bit of personality, which is a step up from what he's shown since he returned to WWE. So I guess that's why I kind of latch onto that as something. Anything,
yeah.
I guess, coming from Bobby Lashley. The other thing I want to talk about.
Well, it was better than what he did with Sami Zayn.
Yeah, well, anything would be better than that, I'm sure.
Yeah, low bar again, right?
Yep, exactly. The Shield and the show ending with them being taken out by a large cadre of heels from the locker room. What do you make of that? You know, we know that McIntyre and Ziggler and Strowman have opposed them, but now it's more than that. It's, you know, the entire heel locker room emptying. I don't feel like we got a real sense of why that is. There was nothing that would have hinted that was coming. Is this because Baron Corbin's now in charge and he instructed the heel locker room to come out? Is this because the heels remember what the Shield did the last time they were together and the original incarnation of the Shield and how they created chaos and the heels are trying to stamp that out? You know, what do you think that explanation is going to be for what we saw on Monday?
I assumed it was Corbin behind it, even though, like you said, there's no specific. Just because he had sent the people out to try to break up the brawl at the start of the show, and then he's the one who had them carted off to jail in the first place.
Yeah, that's a good connection.
You know, it's not like they were hiding the fact that they were coming back. You know, they announced they've gotten out of jail. so I mean, it's a pretty easy explanation that Corbin said, I knew they were going to come back, so I had these guys ready so that they didn't ruin my show, kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I didn't make that connection to the beginning of the show either, and that's a good one to make. Moving on to SmackDown, this coming week we have scheduled Charlotte Flair versus Sonya Deville in singles action, as well as the match we talked about at the top of the show, Rusev Day versus The Bar. The winner of that match will challenge New Day for the SmackDown Tag Team titles at Hell in a Cell. This past week we had Daniel Bryan defeating Andrade Cien Almas, Naomi over Peyton Royce, Rusev Day defeating Usos Insanity to get to this week's match, R-Truth over The Miz in the main event, thanks to a distraction from Daniel Bryan, and AJ Styles attacking Samoa Joe. Andrade Cien Almas, John, and his involvement along with Zelina Vega in the Bryan, Brie, Miz, Maurice deal. Is this a good role for him and Zelina? You know, he was kind of debuted, got a few squash wins, beat Sin Cara in a feud, and it kind of felt like he was going to slowly work his way up the ladder. But then he was thrown in a singles match with AJ Styles on TV out of almost nowhere. He was thrown on a singles match with Rusev, and now he's involved in a pretty big program with Bryan and The Miz. So is this a good fit for Almas right now?
It just seems weird to me. Like, if I had a feeling like they were going to be moving past Miz and Bryan onto a full-fledged Bryan Almas, but that's not seems to be the case.
Yeah.
And it's more of what we talked about earlier, Greg, with the lack of babyface depth, perhaps, that they're just like, well, we want to feature Almas. We have no one else for him to face.
Yeah.
So, and that there is the issue that he does have a woman manager who can wrestle, so they can have him as the two of them as a substitute for Miz and Maurice. But I don't think so. I mean, there is some sense to having somebody in that role, but I don't know that it's a great role for Almas. And I cringe a little bit when you keep hearing the announcer saying, well, he took AJ Styles to the limit, and he took Rusev to the limit, and he took Daniel Bryan to the limit. And I think, well, at some point he's got to get a win.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And I think that's the trouble of using him as a surrogate for Miz and Maurice in this feud with Bryan is, you know, by definition, yeah. Bryan's going to get one over on Almas and Vega more often than not. And is that the right use of Almas right now when he's still in a very formative stage in his WWE career where the fans are trying to decide what to make of him and Zelina Vega? And, you know, do you want to use him as an Alex Riley or a Damian Sandow where he's kind of fed to the wolves while Miz and Maurice retreat and you know, fear their eventual match with Daniel Bryan, and then Almas and Vega get sent to the background. So I think it's a concern, but I think what we've seen from Almas and Vega so far has been very positive, and that makes me think that hopefully WWE sees that too, and they won't allow the two of them to sort of get lost in the shuffle there. I want to move on to NXT real briefly before we depart. This past week, Cassius Ohno over Kona Reeves, and Ohno called out the next big superstar to make his debut in NXT, which people have been putting two and two together and thinking that might be Matt Riddle, who debuted in the crowd at NXT Brooklyn. No names were mentioned, but it seems likely that that could be a direction. We also have the Forgotten Sons over the Street Profits, where the Mighty tried to interfere. They're having a feud with the Street Profits. Kairi Sane won a squash over Trish Adora, and Velveteen Dream defeated Johnny Gargano. And it's now the curious case of Johnny Gargano, John, and they are teetering on the brink with him between, you know, the look on his face after losing to Velveteen Dream, where half the crowd is chanting Johnny Wrestling and half the crowd is chanting Johnny Failure. I thought, and I tweeted about this, I thought that was a great microcosm of what was going on in Johnny Gargano's mind at that time in the storyline, where he's, you know, he's really battling between, in his mind, is he Johnny Failure or is he Johnny Wrestling, because he loses to Velveteen Dream here. So, yeah, you know, I fear a heel turn for Johnny Gargano, mostly because it would just be another example of WWE turning someone heel before they get to the babyface moment for that character, which for Johnny would be winning the title. And just as it would have been for Becky Lynch, where she worked so hard and to win the title, too often WWE or NXT seems to turn these people heel before they get that babyface moment in the sun. And you know, if you are a fan who follows the babyfaces and gets invested in them, you know, you get the rug pulled out of you so many times that you just don't have faith in the babyfaces anymore. Is that what NXT is risking with Johnny Gargano here?
Well, yeah, and I think he was so popular, and he's so good, and there's a reason he was so popular. Now they want to go in a different direction, which doesn't necessarily mean a heel direction. Mm-hmm. You can still have him come out, you know, with the redemption story in the end. And that's kind of what I've been assuming, that
90
this is just another
seconds.
Step in the redemption story. Mm-hmm. My curiosity is, did they, you know, were they expecting the na-na-na goodbye song at him as he left? Because that's, you know, not usually – the battle chant is one thing, right? Because yeah. Some people want him to turn dark, even if he's a babyface. You know what I mean? They wanted him to do the big DDT on the outside onto Velvet.
60 seconds.
They booed when he didn't do it. But then you get that na-na-na-hey-hey song. That's not something that's usually lovingly hurled at people you love to hate, you know?
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to know how they felt and how he felt about that particular reaction from a crowd that's usually so behind him.
And I have to imagine NXT and those booking the show weren't surprised, because I think toward the tail end of the last taping, and even when he got involved, when it was supposed to still be a triple threat at Brooklyn, when he got involved and cost Aleister Black the match against Tommaso Ciampa, he got some boos there. So this was not the first time that he was even mildly rejected by the crowd. You know, I think that people booking NXT have that in mind. This
seconds.
Is the direction they're going with him. And I hope it is a redemption storyline rather than a heel turn. But, you know, I don't know. And what do you do if you're Johnny Gargano and you're a heel and Tommaso Ciampa is a heel as the champion? You know, they're not going to turn him babyface, I don't think. So, you know,
no,
something's got to come to a head there as well.
Yeah, unless they, like, reconcile the way Owens and Sami Zayn did on the main roster.
Yeah, that's the trouble, though, because Gargano and Ciampa are so powerful and have been at the top of NXT for so long. You make both of them heels, all of a sudden, the babyface side is very light. You know, you could do Ricochet, could have Velveteen Dream turn babyface. Aleister Black, if he were healthy, would be the top babyface, but I still don't think, even as a babyface character, he wouldn't touch heel Gargano or heel Ciampa. So then you've got that problem, too, where the babyface, like we talked about earlier with SmackDown, the babyface side is just very thin, and I don't know that it can support two heels the quality of Ciampa and Gargano.
Yeah, yeah, and let's, like you said, let's hope we're not going that route.
Yeah. John, it's been a pleasure. I'm glad we hooked up here and got to talk. Of course, people can check out your work on pwtorch.com, your Raw Hits and Misses column every week on pwtorch.com. Really appreciate you taking the time on this Sunday night to join me for Wrestling Night America.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. It's always a lot of fun.
Excellent. And I thank you, the listeners, for joining me as well. For John Mazzara, I'm PW Torch columnist Greg Parks. We'll talk to you again next week after Hell in a Cell right here on Wrestling Night in America on pwtorchlivecast.com.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.